From the Bob Marley Studio in Orlando, Florida, you're listening to The Diz Unplugged. Hello and welcome to The Diz Unplugged Roundtable Discussion for the week of April 13th, 2011. From Orlando, Florida, I'm your host, Pete Werner, joined at the table this week by my good friends, Kathy Whirling, Scott Smith, Teresa Eccles, Walter Eccles, and John Magi, Max the intern, and young Stella Eccles back in the peanut gallery. Corey and Julie are taking care of Ferris, who is sick with pneumonia. And Kevin is with his mom, who's going in for surgery today. That's why they are not here. And this segment, we are going to talk to Kathy Whirling, who was on the first ever Marceline to Magic Kingdom tour, the new tour that has debuted at the Magic Kingdom. And why don't you tell us about it, Kath?
The official title...
Thank you very much. That was it for the show.
The official title is Walt Disney Marceline to Magic Kingdom Tour. They do it Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 8:15 a.m. The cost is a very reasonable $32 if you don't have some type of a discount. And, of course, you know, Disney offers quite a few different discounts on this.
Which is a really reasonable price.
15% for AAA members, DVC members, and pass holders. 20% for Disney Rewards and Disney Rewards Visa card holders. And if you're a cast member, you get 50% off.
Wow.
So it starts, you know, where all the tours start in Magic Kingdom. We had maybe eight people.
Where's that town hall?
The little place next to the, sorry, using my hands, it used to be the art store, right as you come in on the left-hand side,
right
in there. We had about eight people for our tour as compared to the people that were doing the Keys to the Kingdom tour. But we had a great cast member, and on the show that we did the other day, I couldn't remember the cast member's name. Her name was Mandy. She was awesome. She's
a fine girl.
Boy.
I didn't think of that, but
touche.
The older he gets, the quicker he gets. It's amazing.
That was amazingly quick.
He's good.
Yeah, because she didn't know that, you know, as we've been saying that, you know, we're re-recording this week's show. We had recorded it on Tuesday, had some technical issues, so we have to re-record it today on Thursday. And Kathy didn't remember this girl's name, so John just came up with that right now.
I mean, the minute she said it.
Yep, he's good.
And no one did the next line.
I'm telling you.
What a good wife she would be.
Exactly.
I'm not as quick as you, so.
I'm also thinking Barry Manilow.
Oh, Mandy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She came and she gave without taking.
But you sent her away.
No. Okay, we digress. What were you saying, Kathy?
This is better than her review was last time. Let's keep going.
This is, we'll call that, name that freaking tune.
Okay, so anyway, Mandy put, you know, to life what a cast member is supposed to do. That she was actually on stage. She was performing as she was giving us the tour. That, I mean, she was the most animated cast member, I think.
But did it cross the line into obnoxious?
No, it didn't. She, you know how the cast member always, you know, they're supposed to take ownership of, like, it's their park and their people, and she was really into it. She wanted to share this story. Personally, I thought some of the story as we were walking up Main Street was a little draggy. This tour is...
As in transvestite.
It's children... This is for people 12 and over. I think a teenager, unless they're really into Disney, might not enjoy this. I'm, of course, you know, I like all those details, but some of the story when they were talking about Marceline and what he, you know, did, that his, you know, his brothers worked, and then he, you know, tried to do little things. This is part of the tour where I don't know how it translated over to the Magic Kingdom.
Can you explain? I mean, we all know, what is Marceline?
that was one of his hometowns when he was a boy, that Main Street is like themed after. That was one of the stops on the train.
It's an idealized version of the Main Street in Marceline, Missouri.
Okay. So they were telling us this, and it was, I don't know, I guess done a different way, that it was sort of like, you know, usually when you hear a Walt Disney story, it's like his creation. It's like his original thought. And some of what happens on this tour is like he went to the movies and he saw something. So when he started his theme park, that was the first movie he did an attraction for. So it wasn't like so much Walt the original. It was like, Walt, I saw this and I put it in my park.
How do they know that? Did he tell somebody that, I guess?
One of the things that we know from going to the Disney Family Museum is Walt kept track of everything. I mean, every piece of paper he touched, every note he wrote. So I'm not surprised that somewhere in the history of Walt's life, this could have been uncovered, where he would, you know, make notes for the Magic Kingdom saying, I did this based on that. Oh, I've never heard that story myself, but I'm not.
Yeah,
I think that's what I found
a little strange, because, I mean, I've done a lot of reading and done these tours, and that was the first time I've ever seen it done from, like, that viewpoint. So we stopped several times along Main Street, and it wasn't necessarily to point out, other than to say that this, you know, Main Street was inspired by his, you know, rememberings of what Marceline was like. But there was about another 10 or 15 minutes. Our tour was 2 hours and 15 minutes. We only had 8 people, but it can run 2.5-3 hours, depending on the group size. So we walked up Main Street. We hit the partner statue. And I'm sure we've all, you know, heard stories about the partner statue, but I had never heard, or if I had, I forgot about it, that the height of Walt Disney as compared to Mickey Mouse, that was inspired from Fantasia. That's the height of the conductor Mickey in the. And if you think about it, as I'm standing here conducting, that's where they got the perspective of how high to make them, and even like how they held hands, that was all from Fantasia. So, you know, I'm a person that's into the little details. So that kind of stuff I liked. And from there, we walked up around, you know, the left-hand side of the castle and up around the back. And the first ride we went to was Snow White's Scary Adventure. And again, you know, I've done the Keys of the Kingdom and the Backstage Magic and all these different ones, but I've never been on a tour where we went into Snow White's Scary Adventure. And thought, no, how does this? But apparently that was one of the movies Walt had seen, you know, in his life. And when he decided to start designing a theme park, that was one of the rides that he wanted to create. So they take you through, and you all have the little earphones. So as you're going through the ride, the cast members talking in your ear and telling you things to look out for. And I'm sure most of us think that as you're going through most of these rides, you know, that there's a lot of money put into the effects. And one of the effects in Snow White's Scary Adventure is there's like eyes along the wall. And she was explaining it was like a beanie weenie can, you know, just an old tin can that they had drilled a hole in and put a light in. And that was the effect. So it wasn't.
Well, that was one of the many strokes of brilliance that Walt Disney had. That he used a lot of the tricks that are used in filmmaking,
right?
Mm-hmm.
To build the park, and you know, in filmmaking, you only pay attention to what the camera sees. So you know, using a lot of tricks like that, as long as it provides the effect, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, ridiculously expensive. Right. It could be something
LED
really simple.
LED lights and fancy things.
But even the use of forced perspective to make a building look taller.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something that's done in films.
Right. Facades. Main Street's a giant facade.
In a lot of ways, yeah.
And they were showing, like, as you go through, you know, and the car turns, you know, you might just be up against a blank wall because, you know, they're trying to get you to look in a certain area, and then once you're past that, you know, they don't have anything else. It's like what you said. It's like what the camera sees. And it was interesting to go through and see it from that perspective of, you know, like it was the simple little things that you never really thought about until somebody pointed it out to you.
After you had talked about this and we were driving home, I thought, why haven't they done this as an option for rides? How cool would it be if you can rent or pay money to have a headset where there's a pre-recorded track that says, points out the little nuggets and the little history. And
that'd be cool.
That's a great idea.
Wouldn't that be cool?
I'd like that.
Don't have to do it. It would be an option and maybe, you know, cost a little more if you want to rent the headset for the day. But for everywhere you went, you can listen to them give you information.
Oh, that's cool.
That would be really cool.
Yeah, I like that.
That would be, they'd make a ton of money.
Wouldn't you go on rides you never would go
Absolutely.
On?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'd go on all of them.
Right.
Well, the rides that we went on, the things that they pointed out, there were some of them. I've ridden Carousel of Progress hundreds of times probably and saw things in there that I never knew were there until they pointed them out to me and gave me a whole new appreciation for it. But back to the Snow White ride, when Walt first did it, there was no Snow White in the ride because he wanted you to be Snow White having this scary adventure. But he found after they did it for a while that people came out going,
men were starting to dress as Snow White.
But Americans have no imagination, so it's like, we're Snow White.
You know, so they then incorporated Snow White into the ride. And I guess this is a good place to...
Hey, that'd be a good costume for Scott for next year's Muddy Buddy.
Ah, crap.
Go through as Snow White.
Oh, no.
I hate to see what they come up with for us. But the thing to keep in mind is they don't mention this, at least in the materials that I've seen, but they take you on Snow White Scary Adventure, Winnie the Pooh, the TTA, and the Carousel of Progress. I would think Snow White and Winnie the Pooh, you're going to have a hard time getting in the car if you're using a wheelchair. You know, I'm
struggling with the connection to Marceline.
I had a hard time with that one too.
So this is probably inappropriately named.
It seems to me like they're trying to just take fit in where Walt came up with these ideas. So it's more about
what does Snow White have to do with Marceline, Missouri?
But again, I'm just saying.
Well, because he saw the movie somewhere along his, but it doesn't have anything to do with Marceline. But it's what
Winnie the Pooh. I mean, you can't use that for that. I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't sound like a great tour. It really does. Just the name kind of threw me because when you said Marceline to Magic Kingdom, I'm thinking, okay, they're going to go through and talk about how his experiences growing up in Marceline, Missouri. Translated into what he did at the Magic Kingdom.
I think there was some of that, but not enough of it to be able to go with this title. You know, I said personally, if you're into the details at Disney, this is a great tour to take, and the price of it, you know,
I see that. That's the thing too. How long was the tour?
2 hours. For ours was 2 hours and 15 minutes.
So you got to figure, you know, 2.5 hours. For $32, mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Does not include park admission. You had to have separate park admission.
Right. Park admission. We went to Winnie the Pooh, and she took us through the new queue and pointed out some things on the Wall of Honey that I hadn't seen when I went over to check out the Wall of Honey, and took us through the ride and showed us, like, that was the location for where Mr. Toad's Wild Ride was. And she showed you as you went through one of the details, there's a picture of Mr. Toad giving Winnie the Pooh like the deed to the ride. That, again, unless you knew that it was there, you know, so it wasn't, this wasn't like a Walt inspiration. This was sort of like one of those, you know, Disney things.
Yeah, because Walt had nothing to do with Winnie the Pooh.
So now we're moving around to my favorite part of the tour. We stopped and she told us a little bit. We stopped outside of Cosmic Rays, and again, that was another 10-15 minute thing. And she talked about the 1960 Olympics, that when this I got to see Walter already, when the Olympic Committee wanted Walt Disney to handle the details of the Olympics. He was in charge of, like, providing the entertainment for the athletes that were there in their village. He designed the there was flagpoles from all the countries there. But the thing that I thought was fascinating was Walt Disney got John Hench to design the Olympic torch that they used in the ceremony. And the other day I didn't have all the details. But first of all, the torch is actually in the Disney Museum. But before Walt Disney started working on this, people used to hold the torch like mid-torch or down near the bottom. And Walt Disney and John Hench decided that it was better and you could like pass it off to the next person by holding it up closer to the top.
And she's holding an empty bottle of Aquafina.
That's what
like,
she was,
here, like she's a Statue of Liberty.
It. Oh, yes, that was so much easier.
For those of you who haven't fallen asleep during that story.
See, I thought you were talking about the opposite. I thought people used to hold it low.
And, I thought so, too.
No, and
I,
high, and he you know, take your hand out of the fire and actually hold
and
it a little
I, bit no,
lower.
I went home and I researched this since I had a second chance at this. But part of the thing that I thought was neat about the whole Olympic story was in true Disney fashion, they had planned and done all this kind of stuff. And leading up to the opening ceremonies, it had been snowing like crazy that the conductor of the orchestra looked out and saw he couldn't find his, his performers because there was so much snow. And about an hour then before the Olympic opening ceremony, like the sun came out, like in true Disney fashion, it was like, like it was planned that the sun came out.
Interesting. Here's another bit of Disney Olympic trivia. In the real Marceline, Missouri, the flagpole used at those Olympics has been moved there.
Oh, cool.
And that's where it is. It's got the little plaque on everything. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's cool.
This Jeez. Is interesting. I didn't.
The real details weren't as funny as the backwards ones that I had the
yeah,
other day.
Really?
But anyway, then we sat there for about 15 minutes and people asked questions and things like that. And she pointed, the next place we went was the TTA, and that was something that was from the 1964 World's Fair, that it was sponsored at that time by Ford. And it used to be that they had actual Ford convertibles up on the TTA, the Wedway People Mover.
That's cool.
That they took you around, and Goodyear was the tire sponsor, so you saw the tires from Goodyear, and you saw the car from Ford. And then when it evolved into like what it is today, really the only thing that's left from that is Goodyear is still a sponsor, and they do the ramp going up. But again, this isn't anything you can translate,
that back to Marceline,
that had its beginnings back in Marceline.
Yeah, but it sounded like you learned quite a bit, which I... Going on a tour and for you to learn, I'm kind of surprised.
It should be like Secrets of the Magic Kingdom or Hidden Treasures of
Something
the Magic
like
Kingdom.
That.
But Magic Kingdom through Walt's eyes.
But obviously it was good if you learned a lot.
I was really surprised, when it started off and they started off with some of those stories that, that you just wondered, did some of these stories really take place, or is this like they need to bulk up their Disney stories?
Right.
A little embellishment there.
Because, what if Walt was a couch potato and never went out, and now here's this guy that did a theme park? It's like sometimes I think they slip those stories in that aren't...
I think there's a lot of embellishment and a lot of folklore involved in Walt's stuff, and they don't have to do it.
Like the Lily Bell. They keep making it sound like Walt actually wrote through, and it's like, no...
I mean, it's pretty spectacular what he did.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't
think have to mix stuff up.
Kevin had pointed this out a few times that when we did the first Adventures by Disney last April, the Backstage Magic Tour, and we got on the Lily Bell, they had a cast member get on and start telling us that, Walt took the Rat Pack around on the Lily Bell. And, the Lily Bell was built in 1976. Neither Walt nor Lillian has ever stepped foot on it. But, the story of it was good, good enough on its own. It doesn't need embellishment. And sometimes these cast members get a little too overzealous and start making stuff up.
Well, what is the etiquette when you hear them do something like that?
Bull crap.
I kind of did that.
A big fat liar.
They kind of rolled their eyes at me.
Oh. They didn't argue it or what?
No. They were being very nice cast members, but there was a I won't go into the whole thing, but they were telling a story that I knew was completely and totally fabricated. And I was like, you know what? I'm sorry.
Liar.
It's a bad word.
You live on a throne of lies, and then what Pete's on. Yeah.
You sit on a throne of lies.
Because, again, it's, I say the same thing over here on a broken record. It's fantastic what he did. It's beyond my comprehension.
Right.
That someone could have this effect on people. And why do you have to make it better than it is?
Right. I mean, there's plenty of, like, little details that could fascinate you for hours that they don't need to make up the story. So the last stop on our tour was the Carousel of Progress. And I'm sure most of us have ridden it at least once. Like I said, I'm sure I've probably ridden it hundreds of times, because that's like when my kids were, you know, younger and I'd let them go off and ride rides, I just spend my time at Carousel of Progress waiting for them to be done doing what they had to do.
Take a nap.
No, I love that. That's my thing in Magic Kingdom that to me speaks Disney. That, you know, that they didn't have to have something like that. And in this day and age, for Carousel of Progress to still be around,
it's amazing.
I think is amazing. And to me, that's like where I feel closest to Walt in Magic Kingdom would be Carousel of Progress. So when we went in, we had our own little room. And we did this the other day, so it isn't going to be a surprise. But did you know what? There's one thing that's the same in all four scenes.
Oh, I know.
Teresa!
The dog.
Yes, the dog. Again, that's one of those things. I had...
The dog that never died.
You see the dog, you just... I don't think you pay a whole lot of attention to it, but in each one of the scenes, he has something different in front of him. One time it's a bone, one time it's a ball. And you know the fur that's on the dog?
Don't tell me it's real.
Oh, boy.
No. You know where that...
Walt's actual
where dog. The inspiration for that came?
Wait, don't tell us.
A real dog? I don't know.
Really? I don't know. Something...
Walt was wearing... They had a dog when they first did this, and they said the dog just didn't look, you know, like furry enough. And apparently, he was wearing a sweater that was more like the dog. And like we all said, this is either one of those made-up stories, or he was wearing a really furry sweater.
Yeah, that doesn't...
Disney was wearing the sweater that...
Walt Disney was wearing this sweater.
Dog,
yeah.
Isn't it?
What the...
Yeah. So that's another one of those stories I want to research.
Dubious at best, yeah.
But as you go into the first scene, and you have the announcer, it's the announcer from A Christmas Story, you know, Ralphie, you're going to shoot your eye out. Well, on the bedspread is a bedspread from A Christmas Story, and the Red Ryder BB gun is on there. Now, I never noticed that till they pointed it out. And as you go, I think it's between the first scene and the second scene, there's a window that like looks out, and Marty Sklar's name is on the window.
I thought you could say he was looking in the window.
Peering in the kid's bedroom.
Looking a little creepy.
But there was
I'm
all
Marty
kind
Sklar. What, do you want some rides?
It's your daddy.
And that, like, all the appliances in the carousel are all General Electric, because that was the original sponsor. So even after General Electric went away, they kept all those same
that's
appliances.
That's one of those places, too, where you can really see the simple effects that they put in place for the theatrics, mm-hmm. using the scrims and the backlighting. So now you see people behind the scrim, and now
that's cool. That just fascinates me.
Yeah, I said every time I go in there, and especially now that I've done this, it's like, now that was pretty ingenious how they did that. And you know the scene where the grandpa's sitting in the bathtub? You know Mel Blanc, the guy that did Bugs Bunny? Mm. That's his voice. And again, I've heard this hundreds of times.
Grandpa talks in the bathroom?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Don't privacy around here.
Oh,
yeah. About the air conditioning or whatever. But until somebody pointed it out that that's who it was, I didn't know that.
And don't you, in your mind, didn't you think, well, that's weird because aren't they rivals? Wasn't Warner Brothers a rival of Disney?
Yeah, yeah.
To think that they were...
Well, I said, if anything, after this tour, I felt like I wanted to go home and do more reading, because it was like I heard some of these things. And simple things like if you listen to the song as a Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow, as it goes from scene to scene to scene, the song itself changes
the style
of it. Mm-hmm. Again, I never knew that. And then in the final scene, there's some hidden Mickeys, you know, the futuristic, you know, out of date scene. There's some hidden Mickeys in there.
1980s future.
Yeah.
Are the kids typing on a typewriter?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, and then there was a bulletin board that, again, there was a reference, you know, that Walt had and Marty Sklar up on the bulletin board that, again, I had totally missed. So I said, even though you've done some of these rides, there was something to see, you know, as many times as you've ever been there. Now, again, how that relates to Marceline, I don't know.
So it sounds like a really good tour, just really bad name.
Yeah. I think I was sitting here looking up Marceline when you were talking. It's just a couple hours from my parents. I didn't know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We're talking maybe 3.5 hours.
Isn't there something in Marceline? Is there the schoolhouse?
There's something.
There's a museum. There's the Walt Disney Elementary School. I was just looking at pictures. They're showing. It doesn't look like the Main Street at the Magic Kingdom, but.
No. It's common knowledge that the Main Street of Magic Kingdom was his fantasized about small town USA.
But it looks like Main Street, Biggsville, Illinois, too. So, I mean, you know, it's all small town Midwest is what it is.
They need an ABD tour like that to trace, like, Walt's footsteps.
We've said that before. We said, why aren't they doing a Backstage Magic tour here? And I realized that it's not that same kind of connection to Walt because Walt passed away during construction. But I still think they could do that stuff where they'd have the nuggets of information. And could.
I think there's more than enough they could do here.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where they would, you know, they could really...
Because he did a lot up to the point.
But even, you know, on its own, after 40 years, Walt Disney World has its own history now.
Mm-hmm.
It has its own legacy.
Right.
And, you know, I think that, yeah, obviously, you know, you certainly want to pay homage to the legacy Walt left and the things that he worked on. But it has been... You know, 45 years since he died. The company has done a lot of things in 45 years, and there's no reason they can't pay homage to that, too.
Right.
So I'm not suggesting that, you know, ABD do something, you know, sacrilegious. But I agree. I think that, you know, they could do something here in Orlando and would probably end up being one of the more popular tours.
I think so, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That they do.
It's two ideas now they got to pay us if they do. This and the headset and the ride thing.
Okay. You go ahead and get that money from them.
Yeah, exactly. How did the tour end? Did it just kind of like, okay, now leave?
Yeah, pretty much.
They left her, on the carousel of progress.
They really have a hard... This is silly, but they have a hard time ending their tours.
Yeah, I was really surprised because we just came down the ramp at Carousel of Progress and she just went, okay that's it. And really? She had, like, her little toolbox, and I'm like, oh, we're all going to get a pin or we're going to get something. No, that was just to put the headset stuff back in.
Give me my headset back.
You know, I was just like, okay, bye. That was it?
But she didn't even do that because I'm standing there then like, well, am I supposed to be leaving or so? And I thought maybe they'd, like, walk you back down the street, but they left you at Carousel of Progress.
Yeah. I've been on several tours, and it just feels like, okay, bye. It's the weirdest thing.
Get helped.
I'm done.
So I said, you know, after that was the first opening day of the Town Square Theater, where they now have the new meet and greet for Mickey and the princesses. And Minnie's supposed to make, like, cameo appearances every now and then. But when I was there, Mickey and Minnie both were in there. And if you want to go in and, you know, I did it. I hardly ever go to character meet and greets. But it's fun to go through the queue and see all the stuff, again, in there that they've added, like the little stickers on the steamer trunks and all that. And on top of the one in the Mickey's room, they had a magician's hat with the tail coming out, you know, like pull a rabbit out of the hat. It just, and if you look at all the stickers, you know, there's a fast pass now you can get for that. So a lot of people don't know it's there. So if you want to see Mickey and the princesses, go in. It's a great place. That's how I ended my tour. Nobody told me to go there, but, you know, check it out.
So overall, on a scale of 1 to 10, realistically, what do you give this tour?
I'd give it a 9, just because I think they need to work on that little bit on Main Street, and they need to change the title. But the cast member who gave it, I'd give her 15. She was great.
Really?
Yeah.
Would you do a longer tour and more of it if it was more of that ride stuff?
Mm-hmm. Most definitely.
Yeah, I think that might be a good opportunity for them.
I think that sounds like the most fascinating part of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think that would be really cool if they did more of that. So, all right. Well, thank you very much for that, Kathy. We really appreciate it. Remember also this week we have Scott Smith's Muddy Buddy race experience that he just is extravaganza. testosterone on parade. And Walter, Teresa, and I discuss our upcoming trip to the Mediterranean on the Magic at the end of May. And, of course, our Disneyland team has their show this week. So be sure to check those things out. Thanks very much for listening, everybody. We'll see you again next time on the next episode of the Diz Unplugged Roundtable. Have a great one, and remember, stay out of the damn lakes, please.